Jeffrey.
Sundance.
No.
Sunny.
I don't care. So I interviewed Maxine Hong Kingston and her husband, Earl Kingston.
Two Kingstons.
It was the first time there was one host and two guests.
Oh, is that true?
For us. I think so.
One host and two guests. Yeah, but I guess. Yeah, that's true. You're right.
It's probably also the first time for any podcast.
Right.
So that it's kind of a big deal.
Breaking ground. We're also a radio show.
A radio show.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough being a visionary. Tell me about the Maxine Hong Kingston.
Well, I was honestly intimidated because she's, in my mind, she's one of those living legends. Her first book was in the 70s, I want to say 1976, The Woman Warrior. It was pretty huge. It won a lot of awards. She won the National Book Critics Award and, I don't know, the National Medal of Arts. She got awards from both President Clinton and President Obama. They teach her books in school. She was just a name that I heard of and never thought I would meet her. So when she showed up for the interview and her husband was there, it was a relief to just let them both be in the room talking because it took the pressure off me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad that she actually had the same perspective. She said, this is great. It takes the pressure off me if Earl is here too.
Everyone was in agreement. What was the music talk? What was the discussion?
Well, it was interesting because she was our first guest who had confessed right away to having little to no interest in music.
Ah, perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
for
you know.
A show that talks about music. No, I actually love that because a lot of times I don't want to listen to music. Or a lot of times people are talking about music, even on this show, and I feel a little bit lost, if I'm honest, because I don't know. So I really was looking forward to that perspective of her. She grew up not listening to it or not feeling connected to it or just avoiding it, and it wasn't basically until her son became an adult and started making music that she started trying to listen to it. So that's largely what we talked about.
Hmm. But, I mean, there's musicality in her work. And, I mean, it's interesting that you're a musician and yet you don't like listening to music a lot of the time.
Yeah. I don't know. It's I don't know if I can call myself a musician. I write
music. You studied
music.
I guess I would say I'm not going to, like... give you a commission right now, but I'll call yourself a musician. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that, except I haven't figured out how to say it without sounding smug, but I often just enjoy the sound of whatever's around.
You got this John Cage thing going on, 433.
Yeah, I love that.
So, but her son's a musician, Maxine.
Yeah, her son lives in Hawaii. I mean, I think that's where he was born. Because she moved there with her husband, and they raised their son there, and he stayed there, and then they went back to Berkeley, where she's teaching. She's been teaching for a while. Anyway, they were just delightful. I enjoyed it very much.
All right.
Maxine Hong Kingston and Earl Kingston.
Boom.
Welcome to the Steer. Is that good?
Yeah, that's good. That's right. Really kind of like... Well, I don't mean on the air, but I just mean in general because, well, whatever. Yeah.
Would you both just talk normally so I can see how loud it is?
Yeah. I am talking normally.
I'm trying to talk normally.
This is my normal voice.
I don't think I can quite talk normally. This is my audition tape.
I think you've passed.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Earl's really good.
Earl's an actor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you, is it theater or what kind of?
We're theater.
Yeah.
So that's how Joe got his voice.
Probably.
Yeah. You both have that voice.
He was a good actor.
Yeah.
When he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as we talked about earlier, that we were going to talk about your music appreciation and your enjoyment of music. And you were telling me that for most of your life, you didn't really listen to music. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of my life when our radio was broken.
Oh.
And nobody fixed it.
Huh.
I don't know whether it was that we couldn't afford it or that my parents never thought about it. But for years there was no radio, and then after that, I started writing at a very young age, mm-hmm. And I always felt that other sounds and music distracted me, or it would take me away from the music and words that were in my mind. And so, in a way, I avoided music. Hmm. Not as bad as a poet friend of mine, Phyllis Hoag. But she was my neighbor, and we would be writing. And she put like white noise earphones over her ears, so mm-hmm. she couldn't hear other sounds. And I'm like that, too. I block it out.
So you want to block out all sounds, not just music? Do I understand that right?
But music is very distracting, mm-hmm. Especially music that has lyrics.
Right.
But I also find that when I hear music, the ones with lyrics are the most attractive, mm-hmm. because it feels like they're the only ones I understand.
Okay.
And it's only kind of music that I can remember, right. is when there's words.
Okay.
And when it's just sound, I don't know what I'm listening to. To me, it's very abstract. Mm-hmm. It's somewhere else, and I can't seem to get a grasp on it. I can't even hear it, in a way, but. In recent years, since I've retired from teaching, mm-hmm. And I can spend all the time I want on the writing, and I don't write all the time, so then I think, well, you know, I'm missing something, and other people seem to be having such a good time, maybe I should learn this stuff. And I even wrote about it. I was thinking, I ought to, now I've got I have some more time left in my life. So one thing I ought to do that I haven't done is to concentrate on music and learn what it's all about. Then I figured out that I have to put everything down and not be writing and multitasking, mm-hmm. and reading or washing dishes and have music going.
Right.
I've got to stop and just listen to it. And that's very hard for me. Mose Allison was playing.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, and I mean, wait, there are lyrics, but I was getting so impatient. I'm not doing anything. Mm-hmm. I don't have my knitting or anything. Mm-hmm. But then I had a notebook and pencil in my purse, and so I brought it out. And instead of writing something, I sketched him, and I sketched the band members.
Oh.
And then I thought, okay, I need to be patient. Mm-hmm. It's not just developing an ear. I need to be patient for the music to come in the time that it takes.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a few lines about that.
Yeah,
I'm going to read that.
That sounds great.
Learn the patience to listen to music. Music arranges time. Can't hurry listening. I resolve to dance the Memorial Day Carnival in the Mission when I am 70. I just realized
we did
what I'm saying. I mean, we did, but I realized I'm saying I've got to just sit and listen to the music, but I can't do that. I got to dance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be for something else. I can't appreciate music for itself.
Mm-hmm.
They put us in the back. It was a samba troupe. We rehearsed for over a month, and it was really arduous, like 2 hours at a time. And we did dance through the mission, but the beginners, which was us, they put in the back and they called the popcorn, as in we were just bopping all over the place without too much discipline. But then at the very end of the parade, they put us in front.
They put the popcorns in the front.
Yeah.
And so we led this whole samba troupe in a parade in the mission.
When was this?
It was a few years ago.
Yeah, in the Mission District of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So did the two of you take samba lessons?
Yeah. It's quite arduous. I think we were the oldest people in there. And then you start out about 8 abreast, and you start moving down the floor, and the teacher is doing the moves in front of you. She's facing you, and you're doing the moves, and you go across the floor. And then when you get to the end, you run around and get to the back of the line. And by the time you come forward again, it's a new move.
Earl was going across the floor mm-hmm. on his knees. There's one where you go across on your knees, and you have thin skin.
Yeah.
And so Earl's knees were bleeding, and the teacher says, "Feed the floor."
Yes. Yeah, it was like a scene out of Black Orpheus.
Yeah.
That's always been my approach to music, is just dramatic. It's dancing or just being in a character in some way. But always, didn't you listen to when you were a kid the standard school broadcast? On Friday morning, they made everybody sit there, and then they'd say, "And now, boys and girls, this is Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony."
I remember maybe third, fourth grade, there was some music that was coming. But what the teachers did was give us paper and crayons, and she said, "Draw the music."
Oh.
So, it's thunder, it's storm. And so.
Was this, do you remember if it was sort of like Beethoven or romantic?
No, all I remember is the drawing.
Okay.
Yes. And I remember there were sounds going on and me making, drawing a thunderstorm and rain. And,
mm-hmm. And I'm curious, so music was pretty much absent and you were consciously keeping it away. Did you have the same experience, Earl?
Oh, no. My father had a record store in Oakland.
Oh.
And so I still have a lot of those old 78s.
Okay.
Like Benny Goodman from the 30s and 40s. And I could just go in there and like pick a record. And I had a 3-speed phonograph. So I would conduct Beethoven. And, it was acting. I thought I was a conductor. And I'd take a chopstick or something. And I conducted. No, and then when I was a kid, he took me to see Rigoletto and La Traviata.
Mm-hmm. The operas.
I was just a little kid. I remember Madame Butterfly. And at the end, I was saying to my father, "Daddy, why is that lady sitting in front of us crying?"
Yeah. Well, as a little kid, those are long operas.
They are, yeah. And that kind of backfired. Like it's about my least favorite type of classical music.
Mm-hmm.
It really just seems too long, maybe an aria or two.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have those 78s, and I love to dance around. They're very scratchy. And then in school, there was your hit parade, and in 7th and 8th grade, and we'd listen to it on the radio, and then everybody would say, "Well, what are your favorite songs?" And number one, and so, and my aunts were flappers, so they taught me how to do the Charleston when I was about 10, 11 years old. And they would dance around the living room, too. So, yeah, there was always music.
I remember the hit parade when we got a television set.
Yeah.
And so,
how old were you?
12.
Okay.
When we got our television set, which my great uncle, the River Pirate, won at an auction. No, not at an auction. It was a lottery. And so I remember watching the hit parade, and I really liked figuring out number one song and all that. And but then it was confusing because I'd go to school, and all the kids at school they were disappointed. They said that the hit parade ruins the song because they had heard it in the original,
okay,
or some important musician that had played it, and then the hit parade flattens it out.
I've heard of the hit parade, but I don't remember. Is that something, a regular radio show?
Yeah, it started on
MTV.
The radio. Yeah, and TV too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you still know all the lyrics to How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, right?
Well, yeah, I remember them doing How Much Is That Doggy in the Window.
And Shrimpos Are A-Coming.
It used to be really important. You get to school, did you hear what number one was?
Yeah. And this was in Stockton?
Yeah. But, you know, there was another kind of music that we did have. And the people that lived near us downstairs, they had a phonograph.
Oh.
And they played Chinese music and Chinese opera. And that was the first music. But I don't think I have an ear, mm-hmm, because I just know that there was music and it was sort of different from the other music that I was getting later on. But my sister, who just retired, she's been telling everybody that there was all this Chinese music and she could not stand it. She didn't like the... I don't know what it is, the pitch or
of the Chinese music.
Yeah.
Well, it has a completely different tonal system than Western music.
Yeah.
So if you're used to one or the other, it can the other one can feel grating or off tune.
Yeah, well, that's what she felt.
Uh-huh.
It was grating. She did not like it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she became ignorant of music because she thought music is that, and she did not like it. And now, since she's just retired, she decided that she was going to learn music. So she's taking piano lessons.
Oh, good for her.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? I think she's taking it because all her children are musical,
mm-hmm,
and they dance, they play instruments.
The next generation from us is very musical. All your sibs have kids that are musical.
Yeah.
Well, my ethnic music was listening to Bing Crosby singing White Christmas and Silent Night, and I had to sing along. And so those records, I never listen. Every time I hear Bing Crosby, I want to go in the closet and lock the door. It's terrible.
But I think my sister being inspired by her children to do music, so... When our son became a musician,
mm-hmm,
then I thought, well, that was when I thought, okay, I've got to get serious and find out what this all is all about. So, he got on the piano and he was explaining to us keys and chords and I think quarters and eighths, and I was like totally confused, and I could not replicate it on the piano. And he got more and more frustrated. And then he's married to Saki, there's a Japanese word for the mean teacher.
Uh-huh.
And so that's who he is. So he cannot explain it to us.
Oh.
So I just try to...
But it sorts well with him, because having a writer and an actor as parents and not wanting to duplicate that, his solution was to get into a field that we weren't in and that we were we knew nothing about.
Well, that would be music and sports.
And yeah, yeah, it yeah. worked.
So, do either of you have a feeling for where he? I mean, besides just trying to rebel against the two of you, where he got into music?
Oh yeah, yeah. I when he was in high school, I guess high school, not junior high, mm-hmm. but in high school. So we were living in Hawaii, mm-hmm. And he had lots of friends at school.
You moved there when he was 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Oh, he was just four or five. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he moved there. He had a toy guitar, and he was running around in the neighborhood with his toy guitar.
Yeah. And the neighborhood kids came over just after we moved in. They said, "Can Scott come out and play?" And we said, "Well, there isn't any Scott." They said, "Oh yeah, the little boy with a guitar who plays the Beatles," and we called him. "Did you change your name to Scott?" And he said, "Yeah."
Why?
But then in high school, he had all these Hawaiian friends. Mm-hmm. And he said that no matter which house you went to, everybody had all these musical instruments and they were playing. Mm. And then he decided that he was just going to move out and go live with the Hawaiians, which he did.
At what age?
I don't know.
I think he was like a junior in high school.
Yeah.
He moved out as a junior.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't like he moved out. I mean, sure.
He'd bring his laundry back.
He'd come see us, but then he would stay with them overnight or for days at a time, and he's playing music mm-hmm. in every one of the houses. All the people are singing, and they have instruments all over the place.
It's really wonderful that you allowed that, and not a lot of parents would be comfortable with their friend. With their kid going off for a few days.
Yeah, well, we were hippies too.
Not much we can do about it.
No, yeah. Yet he went to a kind of a progressive school.
Yeah, we sent him to a hippie school.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. The Hawaiians, they had all these instruments, and he could pick them up and play them, and he could sing in Hawaiian. And then when he was playing the cruise ships, they cruised around in the Pacific. And so he was singing Maori, Fijian.
Yeah. And that also kind of the farming out thing is there's a tradition in Hawaii of Hanai where you can go and live with other people.
Yeah. It's sort of adopted by
them. Yeah, auntie. Live with the auntie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you want to listen to part of, I don't remember if you said that it was your favorite song or his favorite song, but it's a song that, at the very least, your friend, the poet, Robert Pinsky likes.
Oh, yes, Bonging Along.
Yeah.
Bonging Along is a song about a young man who's in love with a woman who smokes too much dope.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Pinsky said that he really enjoyed the recitative mm-hmm. in this, and I think this is influenced by the Ames Brothers and who's that guy that did the Duke of Earl?
Oh yeah,
So in the middle of the song, he can talk to the girl, and so there's the music. And then there's the just plain speaking with the words. And I think Robert Pinsky, like me, being a writer, we enjoy where he's just straight talking and without all that music stuff.
Bong. And all she ever wants to do is smoke her bong. She's my favorite stoner, but every time I phone her, she tells me that she's busy, then she says so long. But I know what's up, I know what's going on. She only wants to be alone with her bong. She don't really love me, she's never thinking of me. All she does is smoke and you know that you're wrong. She's just bobbing along, yeah, just like Cheech and Chong. Smoking and a token, bonging all day long. She's just bobbing along, yeah, from dusk till dawn. That's why I wrote the song about Trixie Bong. She's bong, bong, bonging, bong, bong. Open your red eyes and try to see that my love is all you need. Tracy, my darling, why you smoke so much weed? We used to be so happy together. I know deep in my heart that if you're forced to choose between my love and your bong, you'll choose the bong. So Trixie, I've come to realize that if I want to keep you in my life, well then there's just one thing left for me to do. I'm gonna start smoking too. So now we're bonging along just like Cheech and Chong.
He's playing the foot bass in there too.
Oh, you're telling me about that earlier. Can you describe that again, that instrument?
In a way, it's his own innovation. You know, he was a bass player, and so he's backing up other people, but he wanted to. You know, ever since he was a kid, he wanted a one man band. And so he just found this instrument where it's like these pedals. It's like an organ.
Yeah, pedals on an organ.
And he plays it with his feet, and then he also accompanies himself on the ukulele, and then he also sings. So the he's got the first iteration of a one-man band.
Yeah. But before that, years ago, he had like a little hacky sack with sand in it that he'd put between his toes, and he'd shake that like a marimba, right?
Yeah, he's got these toes that work very well because being in Hawaii, everybody's got toes.
They're bare feet mostly.
Yeah, work. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a moment when I was playing that where I wished this were TV and not radio, because you made the sweetest face once he started singing about how much he loves his bong. Can I just ask, does that embarrass you?
No, it doesn't embarrass me.
Okay.
I think it's funny. Yes.
Yeah, it is funny.
Yeah.
Do you want to listen to the one called Love Doll?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. We want to say something about Love Doll.
Well, it's just like he spent some time in Japan. He says that is very big over there, that the guys take their Love Dolls out on dates.
Yeah.
So that's.
I didn't know. Really?
That's what we said
people
too, really.
People will take a Love Doll out to dinner.
Wow. Interesting. All right. Well, let's play it and then we can talk some more.
Love Doll, she's got it all. She's so sweet, nice and neat. Cute little toes on her cute little feet. Sassy smile on her ruby lips. Shapely legs and curvy hips. She got long hair, bedroom eyes. Slender waist and potent thighs. Pretty fingers on her perfect hands. She's my leading lady and I'm her man. And so you wanna know how I made her mine. It was so easy, but kinda sleazy. I just had to go online and place an order for my love doll. Say it again. She's my full service mannequin. Undercover lover, made of solid rubber. I can't get a date, so it's time to inflate my love doll. Ooh, smooth and sleek.
I just enjoy it. It's so clearly cheers you guys up listening to this. You guys are laughing in a positive way. I can tell that you love it.
Yeah. You know, he's when he was 36, mm-hmm. he cut his first album, and then he said to me that I was 36 when I published my first book.
Oh yeah.
And that that was a deadline that he made for himself. And I didn't know that. He never said anything until he was done. And I thought, my gosh, and you know, for decades, he's been seeing me as some kind of a front runner or somebody who set a deadline. You gotta do it before you're 36.
Yeah, there's no reason to have that kind of pressure.
I know, but he put that pressure on himself. You know, we never put any pressure on him.
I think it's always tough for children that have successful parents or well-known parents to step out of that shadow and find their own way.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you did everything you can to just let him be free and find it on his own.
Yeah, yeah. But then I think that he's a person who likes discipline and limits and order.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't figure that out.
Oh.
Yes.
But he's very intuitive too. But he, before the music, he did some episodic TV and just small parts. But we asked him, how did you figure out what to do? And he said there was one series that he just watched the main kid in it and watched what he did and just sort of intuited acting from that. And he was good at it. He still gets those, you know, $5.12 residual checks.
Well, there's one other song that that we talked about playing. It's called Break Song.
Thank you for that underwhelming round of indifference. You guys are the best. Well, there's one at least. Thank you, sir, for the applause. Singular of applause. You're a wonderful audience. Well, folks, thanks for stopping by tonight. My name's Joe Kingston. I'm going to take a short break. I'll be back in about 15 minutes for another set of music, so stick around. Don't go away.
I'm gonna take a break. I won't go far. Time for me to smoke a joint in my car. Now's your chance to buy a beer from the bar. Then you can put the change right in my tip jar. Yeah, I'm gonna take a break. I won't be long. Just a couple hits off of my bong before I go on with the show. The dough better flow into my tip bowl. The crowd is rude. The room is rough. You know this place don't pay me enough. I gotta have me a decent stash. So why don't you fork over some of that cash? Yeah, I'm gonna take a break. I'll be right back. I'm smoking.
I have mixed feelings about listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
It brings up the whole problem of how do you make a living being a musician.
Yeah.
And I hear bitterness, you know.
Sure.
Where's the applause, you know? Because, you know, he has said that after coming home from a gig but he makes it funny too. He said there was a man who came up to him and said, "Did you say thanks for the applause?" and he says, "Yes." And the guy put
$20
in his tip jar.
Yeah.
And so he has come back and with a. And I just hear a lot of bitterness. Like people don't they didn't appreciate it. Nobody was listening. But then he puts all of that together, and he makes comedy out of it, and he makes fun of it. Oh, and then this recording, it just won a prize for best comedy.
Oh, good.
It was at AZ Talent.
In Phoenix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For original song. But I understand that a lot of the musicians now, between sets, mm-hmm. they make some kind of song or jokes or come by the CD or put
on
something
stage banter.
Something in the tip jar, mm-hmm. And they'll make jokes or they'll make a little song about it. But I've seen even like famous musicians and bands, they talk about, you know, come and buy the CD. Be sure to come up here.
Yeah, it seems to be getting harder and harder to make a living as a musician because everyone's so used to just downloading for free.
Yeah.
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 And the attention span too of people listening. I've seen very good people just not listen to, or if you hear sets sometimes from the clubs in New York, you'll hear people talking so that you know they have to lower it just so you can hear the music.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, the last time that Joe made a living as a musician was playing the cruise ships.
Oh, sure.
And there you have steady salary, you have a place to live, you have food, mm-hmm. but you can't do that and play the kind of music that you want. So.
Right, right. They have a certain expectation of styles of music. You also gave a list of some musicians that you've been learning to enjoy since Joe became a musician. So I was going to play some of those and just see if we can talk about them. So that's, I have to say, it's weird for me to hear that because I haven't heard any Bob Marley in so long. It was something when I was a kid my brother would play, and it brings me back to a time, it's kind of almost embarrassing, but I think at fifth grade or something, first feeling in love and repeating that song in my head because none of my friends wanted to talk to me about love. They're like, don't talk to us about that. So I would just be walking around humming that song. But I'm curious, is that you mentioned that Bob Marley is one of the musicians that you're enjoying.
And I'm just recently enjoying it, mm-hmm. because, Earl, you've been playing it every day over and over again. And I would walk through the house and I, what? Is that? I don't like it. And it is so repetitive. I mean, all I could hear was he's saying the same thing over and over. And the music seems to be the same over and over. The words are the same. There's no variety in this. Mm-hmm. And then you would play it over again.
Yeah.
And then the next day I come through and I hear it again. And then, I don't know how long it was. Maybe a couple of weeks or a month or...
I think it's better than Prozac, just what you just played now. It just seems so full of sunshine. It just, yeah.
I didn't hear any sunshine.
Yeah.
But then one day, I heard it.
Oh.
And it sounded good.
Huh.
And then I said, well, what is that? And you said it was
Bob Marley.
And I said, oh, I've heard of him. He's really famous, isn't he? Oh, no wonder he's famous. That was pretty good.
I wonder if you just had happened to have some strong coffee or something that had changed your mood where you were ready for it.
I just think it takes me a long time for music to even penetrate into my ears and into my psyche. Maybe it takes that kind of repetition before it gets through to me.
I knew people, we were talking on the way over here, how I was studying music composition, and I knew people that were studying really seriously. And with especially modern composition, it can be all over the place, and people are constantly trying to find new, unusual sounds. And so the students would be walking around with headphones, constantly listening to absorb it, because especially if it's new to you, that repetition really helps to get used to it.
Mm. Oh, maybe that we, like learning a language.
Yeah.
You have to hear it and say it over and over again.
Would you like to hear a Beatles song?
Oh, sure.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me of being with Joseph in London.
Oh.
And the two of us were, we were just traveling around. And
Was he an adult at this time or a kid?
Yeah, maybe 20 or something. Mm-hmm. Was he about 20 something?
Yeah.
We were going to all these various places, and I wanted to take him to the British Museum, mm-hmm. because I wanted to look at the manuscripts, you know, Virginia Woolf and James Joyce, mm-hmm. and I wanted to see the original handwriting.
Yeah,
and he was like, "Come on, you know," he just didn't want to do this. We were in a cab, and I was talking about these great places we got to go, and he was saying, "Oh, he wants to get back to the hotel, or he wants to do something else," and we were going back and forth, and the cab driver just stopped in front of Westminster Abbey, and he said, "Get out. This is an important place. You get out of the car and you go there."
Mm-hmm.
But then I took him to the British Museum, and we were looking at manuscripts of great novels. And then we turned this corner, and there are manuscripts. There's sheet music done by musicians. And I remember Schubert, and there's Beethoven, Mozart, and then in a little case, just a small glass case, and there was paper, the kind of paper that we use in grammar school, and that kind of rough paper, and in childish pencil handwriting was Rita the Meter Maid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the Beatles wrote out the lyrics in, and there were lyrics that were not recorded, mm-hmm. and so we could look at all of this Beatles stuff, and Joseph was so impressed, and this made the whole trip to London okay.
Oh, thanks to that cab driver.
Yeah. He was even at the age of two, because we would go up to the Santa Cruz Mountains. Friends had a cabin up there. And he was two. And I think that one day we played Rubber Soul just over and over and over again. And I think he just absorbed, because he really knows the Beatles songbook. And he can do all of that.
It was so wonderful. He was doing some show, and we were in the audience. This is really early on when we would go to as many of his shows as we could. And he actually recognized us in the audience, and he thanked us for the Beatles.
Yeah.
As if we were the ones that we invented the Beatles and we gave them to him.
Well, you probably introduced him to them.
Yeah.
How about, you also mentioned the ink spots.
Oh, yeah. It's the ink spots that would break into the middle of the song, mm-hmm. and they would say things. Do you remember any?
Well, like what he's doing in Paul Coloma.
The bass, the guy who with a deep voice.
My darling, I know that our love is going nowhere.
Yes.
I remember, that sounds familiar. I can't remember the name of that tune.
Yeah.
If I didn't care.
Oh, if I didn't care.
If I didn't care.
Care for you.
Would I feel this way? If I didn't. Yeah, like that.
And then he would say, if I didn't care.
If I didn't care, darling.
When Joe was on the ships, he could front the big bands, and I know that that's when he enjoyed the Ink Spots, Cab Calloway, all these people who would be
Louis Prima,
in front of the bands,
yeah.
and that's what he wanted to do—the music of the 40s.
Yeah.
It's fun music. It's always weird, I find, listening to that music, because I know it all sounds so happy and carefree, but at the same time, in Europe, there's so much horror going on.
Yeah.
We could play a little bit of that Ink Spot song. You want to hear a little?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I didn't care more than words can say, if I didn't care, would I feel this way? If this isn't love, then why do I thrill? And what makes my head and round while my heart stands still? If I didn't care, would it be the same?
That's really good stuff.
It's easy to enjoy.
Yeah. You know, that occurred to me when I think back. And just recently I started making this division about the friends in high school who sang and the friends who didn't. And I think there are some friends that I never heard them sing, and there are other friends that just when you're driving along, they love to sing. And those hit parade songs, because I had we called ourselves the upperclassmen. There were four of us, and we couldn't sing worth a damn, but we did sing with an accordion and a bass. And at assemblies we sang, and it was just terrible. But, you know, people that liked to sing didn't mind hearing their voices. So I think he grew up, I was singing around all the time in the house, and I think he heard that too.
You mentioned Louis Prima earlier. That's someone that your son Joe loves. Is Louis Prima also something that you've been getting into more?
Well, I listen to him knowing that in a way, I think I can hear Joe trying to imitate him.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear Louis Prima and Joe. They seem to sound alike.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's play a little. This is probably his most famous song. I saw you nodding along. You must be feeling that a little.
Yeah. I am acquiring a sense of rhythm.
Good for you. I find that, even though, I mean, I've heard it so many times, it's been a while, and I hear it now, and it's so infectious. I can completely see how it's such a dance number. Everyone would rise and go to the floor.
Yeah.
You mentioned knitting. I didn't know that you're a knitter.
Oh, yeah. I knit and I sew.
Oh, yeah. Great. What are you knitting?
Oh, at the moment, I'm not knitting a thing.
Okay.
I'm just knitting. And it'll be whatever it turns out to be.
Oh, you don't start with any kind of plan?
No.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My wife knits, but she always knows, now I'm making a sock, now I'm making a scarf, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's... I'm surprised that you can just go and then you watch it become something.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be anything. But I think it's the same with the writing.
Right.
I don't know where it's going. I mm-hmm. just go somewhere. There's no outline. There's no plan. I just thought of what Confucius said about music.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever controls the music controls the world, like a top spinning in the palm of your hand. So what he's saying is that the music of the time
mm-hmm.
Controls the spirit of the time.
Mm.
And when I listen to, when I think about what he's saying, what is the music of this time?
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm hearing is that heavy metal stuff and hip hop and that repetitive noise.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds very dangerous and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that's what's happening in our time.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like a dangerous time right now. I'm in the last couple of weeks, I've been feeling more anxiety. I feel like I go up and down every couple of months where I'm feeling fearful and whatever. So I can completely understand that you would see music reflecting that, because I'm sure I'm not alone.
And then when I hear this happy music,
mm-hmm.
And then... this joyous Louis Prima and the happiness too that's in the Beatles, and also hearing Joseph, whose music is so funny, mm-hmm. and it's not the music of this time, mm. and I think this is one reason he's not getting the exposure. Gigs that he wants, mm-hmm. because his music is not of this time, yeah. and this is a lot of stuff I worry about with the music.
Yeah, I think that can be a struggle for a lot of artists if they're not hitting the note, whatever the note is, mm-hmm. hitting the note that people are looking for right now, maybe 10 years from now or 10 years ago it was wanted, but that you have to stay true to yourself, but that can be really frustrating if no one else wants it.
Yeah, that's right. And one way that I counsel Joseph and also my students is, yeah. like, okay, just write it and compose it and record it or put it into a book shape and save it, and your time will come. Mm-hmm. There will be another time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's beautiful. I think that's a really nice way to end. Thank you both, Maxine and Earl, for coming here. It was really nice talking to you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Steer, recorded at KBOO Radio, broadcast on dublab.com, hosted by Jeff Alessandrelli and Sonny Buckinger. For more, see our website at www.the-steer.com. You can download our episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, and anywhere podcasts are found.